Welcome to the Pen and the Yad. We start the Torah reading cycle over again with Bereishit. Rabbi Michael Siegel of Anshei Emet Synagogue in Chicago talks with author Jonathan Eig about finding God in the order of creation.
So when I was in elementary school, one of the most terrifying moments for me was desk inspection. Do you remember this? We had those desks that the lid would, you know, flip up. Suddenly it was just like out of nowhere. Time for a desk inspection. And then everybody would have to open their desk up. And of course, the girl next to me had this perfectly pristine desk inside. And mine, it was a welter and waste, as I said, over the holidays. How would you have done with the proverbial desk inspection?
Oh, terribly. I was always a mess. And I remember some kids would also get busted for all the stuff they'd stolen from other kids on that day because you had your friend's baseball or you had a comic book or something that you'd taken from someone else, and that would get discovered.
Oh, wow.
It was also a day of reckoning for many. I don't think I was a thief, but I was definitely a slob.
Right. I think that the sad part for me is if I actually had stolen something from someone, which I would never have done, I would never have been able to find it, I guess, so it doesn't much matter. So the creation story starts with this notion of chaos, of tohu vavohu. But if we look at the structure of the portion itself, then you have to also see the logic that the creation story begins with God. God is a fact. God, we don't know God's origin story. This isn't a Superman comic where you learn the origin of this one or that one. This is God. God exists. We don't know where God began. We know where God ends. God exists. And it begins, Bereishit bara Elohim, which is translated in the Christian Bible as, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, which would lead you to believe the creation was creatio ex nihilo, came from nothing. There was nothing, and then God created something. But in Hebrew, it actually means, Bereishit means, when God began to create the heavens and the earth, comma, the earth was unformed and void with darkness over it. So this is what it was. It was this kind of primordial goo. And so the world was chaos until God came and created order. And for many, this is a proof of God. The fact that there's order in the universe is the ultimate proof of God. The fact that the sun rises in the morning and goes down at night, which is how the Torah begins, right? God separates light from darkness, and on it goes, and water from dry land, and there's order in the universe. And because there's order, that can't just happen by itself. There has to be the orderer. There has to be the God who is the supreme power behind moving from chaos to order. Do you find that compelling?
Yeah, I find it really, really compelling. There's so much chaos. Just the fact that we even are conscious of our chaos, just the fact that we're conscious of the fact that our minds and our bodies work together, that we're capable of struggling to understand all this chaos and to make sense of it, compels me to believe that God must be giving us these things. Because how else could you possibly explain the strangeness of the universe? How could you possibly explain any kind of order coming from this chaos, and that we have minds capable of processing it? It's just fascinating. And the fact that we can even contemplate it, I think, is proof that something's going on there.
Well, the reality is that Judaism actually uses this as a proof of God. But in a scientific age where it's becoming more and more likely that there was a big bang out there, does that fly in the face of this idea that there was this shattering in the universe and everything sort of just followed from there?
To quote the great philosopher Popeye the Sailor, I ain't no physicist, but I know what matters. I don't understand the Big Bang, but the fact that if that is the case, if there was a Big Bang and it somehow created life on Earth, doesn't that alone seem miraculous enough to you?
I love what you're saying, but what I want to suggest to you is that for Judaism, for Jews, I should say, and this goes all the way back to people like Maimonides, there isn't a scientific view of the universe and a religious view of the universe that are diametrically opposed from one another. Either I have to believe in creationism, which is fundamental understanding of what is actually a mistranslation of the Bible, that we go from nothing to something and the world was created in 7 days. And we don't have to go through this tortured logic of, well, what's a day in God's time? 124 hours is a billion years. We don't have to do any of that. The Torah doesn't seem to be all that concerned about the details of the creation. What the Torah wants you to understand is that there is a force behind the creation and that the fingerprints of God are in the order of the universe. And for Jews, that doesn't have to conflict with scientific knowledge. The fact that there was a big bang in the universe doesn't mean that the order came from nowhere, came from nothing, came from nowhere. The order comes from somewhere, and that somewhere is God. God is the ordering force in the universe.
I'm very comfortable with that, and I just think that it makes sense that we should be struggling to figure it out, that we could use this kind of scientific knowledge to try to understand the creation of the universe. The fact that we can wrestle with it and that our brains are capable of coming up with measures to try to solve these mysteries is, to me, proof of God. How can you even explain that otherwise, that we are capable of thinking this way?
You know, from my perspective, it takes more faith to believe that everything just happened, that the fact that you and I are having this conversation and we are using language and communicating on a what I'd like to think is a high level, and we're thinking together about esoteric ideas, and that this all sort of evolved and just happened without rhyme or reason, to me, takes more faith than to believe that there's an ordering force in the universe.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember a story in the paper a few years ago that said that the odds of discovering, you know, conscious life, anything remotely like ours on another planet, you know, something like 20 gazillion to one, right? It's just so remote that all the circumstances that produced life on this planet could happen again somewhere else, that even these scientists, these mathematicians were saying that the odds that it happened even once here on Earth are so infinitesimal that you have to believe in some higher power. These scientists were saying there's no logical way to explain that this happened.
I couldn't agree more, but this conversation isn't so much about the logic of the Bible. It's about the illogical nature of human beings, because what should be patently obvious to us isn't. And we create all kinds of other ways to look at the universe, because the ordering issue isn't just about God. And here, I think, is the great religious leap that the Bible is going to make. Human beings are created in the image of God, and there's endless debates about what that means, since the Torah doesn't exactly explain it. But if you look at it from a literary point of view, perhaps what B'Tselem Elohim actually means, that being created in the image of God, is that human beings have the power to either create chaos or create order in the universe. And that by the logic of the Torah is that God creates order, human beings can create order by being God's partner. Or conversely, we have every possibility of creating disorder, disharmony in the world by the same token. That the choice is in our hands.
Yeah, I love that. That's, to me, really powerful. And I think it's ultimately the most important thing that religion gives us, because we don't really need to understand how the earth was created, but we do need to understand what to do with our time on the earth and how to make it a more loving and a more peaceful and loving place.
There's no question. And what is particularly horrifying to me, and I want to be very clear about this, is how the Bible has been misused. And this is not simply in the purview of other religions, because Jews have done a good job of this as well. During the Civil War, for instance, there were not a few rabbis in the South that were using the Bible to justify slavery. And so it's easy enough to find what you were looking for in the Bible. But the question, I think, in every generation is, what does order look like and what does chaos look like? I'm thinking about Dr. King, actually. And I'm thinking about the irrational universe that he was living in, of having people take the Bible. And we begin with one person. We begin with Adam. And the rabbis say that the reason that we begin with just two people is so that I can't say to you, well, I come from X and you come from Y. X was greater than Y, right? We're all from the same two people. That makes us co-equals. That means that we were all created in the image of God. And the fact that we are able to use the Bible to invert that, to, which I would say, to pervert that idea, is stunning to me. And so here you have someone like Dr. King standing up there as a religious figure, and people are countering him because they're hearing different sermons in their church that are being brought to heal to the societal needs of the time, the socioeconomic needs of racial injustice. And it's one of the great ironies of our time of how we create chaos. And there's no other way to understand our situation today than to use the term tohu vavohu. It is chaotic. It doesn't make sense. And the only way we're going to bring order to this is to begin with that simple idea of what does it mean to be created in the image of God?
That sounds great. Unfortunately, you know, religion has been the cause of wars throughout time. It has been the cause of division. It is divides us in so many ways to this day, politically, looking at the Supreme Court nomination and how religion is driving so much division on that issue right now. I can, you know, go on, and you can look around the world and find examples of it.
First of all, I'm going to counter what you're saying for a minute. I think human beings create conflict. They use all kinds of things for their benefit. So religion is one of them. And I don't think that makes religion bad. I think that human beings misuse things. And so I want to be clear about
that. Yeah, that's a very good point.
I'm interested in understanding what you mean by Barrett's appointment or her nomination to the Supreme Court and how religion is playing a role.
Well, there are many people who believe that the ultimate goal is to control the Supreme Court so that abortion can be banned. And those are for religious purposes primarily. There are people who believe, whose religion tells them that abortion is a terrible sin and a terrible crime. And they are happy and eager to have another vote on the Supreme Court that that would agree with them. And I think that's fundamentally driven by their religious beliefs.
And yet what we expect from our justices is that they will also adhere to the law and to the sanctity of the Constitution. So does that mean the only people that we can elect to the Supreme Court are non-religious people? Aren't we all affected by our philosophies of life, be they religious or non-religious? I mean, why would we single out religion here in this particular issue and say, well, because she's Catholic and because Catholicism, look, she may very well, and I think that there's every reason to think this, be anti-abortion. I don't know. It just feels like we're now going to bar Catholics from the Supreme Court because of the balance of the court. That feels dangerous.
No, I agree with you. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that religion has become, or in this case, a particular religious belief regarding abortion has become the single motivating factor, the most important factor in the selection of this particular justice. And that to me suggests that we're not looking at the whole person. And there's certainly no reason why a person should be excluded based on any religious belief. I also find it difficult to believe that somebody should nominate it because of one particular belief. And I just think that in this case, that is being driven in part by religious beliefs.
I think there's a lot to what you're saying, and we're not going to be able to parse this issue. And I want to say this very directly. As a rabbi, I'm very concerned about the abortion issue. As a father of three daughters, I'm very concerned about the abortion issue. So as a rabbi, I'm concerned about the abortion issue because Jewish law would dictate there are some situations where an abortion is not a choice, but it's an obligation. And I would be very, very reticent to give that up under this kind of sweeping abortion change, which is happening, by the way, across the country in many states. But I would also say that, just coming back to this portion, that the issue of Tzelem Elohim, the image of God, is sacrosanct. And one of the issues, and I know this is going to be very unpopular for what I'm about to say, but I feel this to my core. This idea that human beings are created in the image of God means that every human being is created in the image of God. That means that every human life is holy in its own sense. So that we should be very concerned about a society which is permissive with abortion, because we should be thinking about what does that do to our understanding of human life? What does that do to that understanding? How do we understand it when we say, well, life doesn't begin here, it begins here and all the rest? This is the unsung story, is that the numbers of abortion have been going down because of the success of contraceptives. We have a responsibility to teach men and women, their bodies put a great sense of responsibility on them, because you have the potential of creating human life and you have to be concerned about every human life. So let's take care and be proactive about ensuring contraception so that we don't get into this situation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think that the key to that is respecting people's bodies and their rights to control their own bodies and not legislating that. But that's a political argument we could go on all day about.
Well, we've come a long way in this conversation.
Yes, we have.
We started with the notion of the proof of God. But I think that we also, but we're ending with the notion that the proof of God is within us. How do we use that idea? How can we go forward? How can we value human life? And how can we do it across the board in every way, shape, or form? How do we not only honor the sanctity of life in birth, but we also honor the sanctity of life in old age, in a society which needs healthcare and things like that? That's the question for our society. It's a large one, but I'm glad we at least began it today.
Me too.
Thanks, Jonathan.